Think about just today. How many advertisements have you been exposed to? Let me recount my own. In the morning, I sit down for breakfast and read The Economist, a newspaper with full-page ads. Then, say, I watch some YouTube and am forced to watch two unskippable ads in a row just to watch this. Take my dog for a walk and see advertisements everywhere. I chill in my bedroom with Spotify ads blaring in my ears. And the thing is, compared to most people, I see comparatively few ads. I have ad blockers on my computer, phone, and iPad. Don't take public transport regularly, which is a common vector for advertisers, and I don't listen to much Spotify. Despite this, my brain is infected many times a day by people trying to get my money and my attention.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Fighting Failure, the podcast where we discuss solutions to the climate crisis. This is episode 39, all about advertising. I'm your host for this episode, Hisham Kanan.
And I'm your co-host, Oscar Archibald.
Let's start with the problems. Right. In some of the previous episodes in this consumerism section of season three, is this now? We've come quite a way. In season three, we've discussed this sort of consumeristic mindset where people feel the need to buy products to stay up to date with the latest trends and the latest this and that. But how do these trends really get out to the public? And the answer is advertisements. So advertisements are everywhere, like Oscar mentioned at the beginning of this episode, and there's no escaping them in the modern world. If there was a product or service that you actually wanted or needed, you would seek it out. So if you need to go to the airport, you check taxi costs. But when you're scrolling through YouTube and you get an ad for, you know, J. Crew's newest floral t-shirt or whatever, you know, whatever comes on, then it's, you know, it's because humans are sort of, I don't know how to say it. Humans are sort of self-centered, and there's this stigma against owning or looking like you own old or out of date things. And so, I mean, this is something that we also talked about in previous episodes. And so what happens is, you see that, and it creates this immediate want for this new product that you might not necessarily need. I mean, you might have last season's trend. You might have got a shirt 2 months ago, but, you know, you see this and you have this immediate want for it. In some cases, not in every case, of course. And then you go out and buy that, and then this leads to this unnecessary purchasing of products, and then the production of products that we might not necessarily need, and these products might not be produced in the most sustainable way. So, I mean, there's a lot of environmental implications that come out of advertisement and the way that we try and hook our audiences into purchasing products that they might not necessarily need.
So the fundamental thesis about advertising is that, and this is what differentiates it from like other services that you might seek out, is that advertising creates an artificial want for a product or a service. So like Isha said, if you had a legitimate want or a legitimate need for a service, like we all need food, right? We all need to eat. So we might go out to the supermarket and find something to eat. But what's different is when the supermarket comes to us with their advertising and they say, you know what? You want this brand new donut that we've got in store now half priced, or you want this chicken that's now three times more healthier, or look at this, we've got a new plant-based range. Don't you want to try that? Come right now. Come give us some money.
I don't even live in a place where Starbucks is available. I signed on to Starbucks Wi-Fi once, or actually two or three times during the summer, because I was sitting in Starbucks doing some summer homework and catching up on some other work. And so I was doing that, and I signed on to this their free Wi-Fi. But now, I mean, like every 2 days I'm getting advertisements for their new products. And even, you know, so I opened some of the advertisements and I'm like, oh, that looks really good. But, you know, it's this thing. It's like they really try and get you to come more than you might need, or buy more than you might need. Like I was getting all these advertisements for pumpkin spice lattes and stuff, which is a big thing in like the US around Halloween time, especially in Vermont. So there was all these pumpkin spice, everything. Like it's everywhere, and it was in all these advertisements, and it's like, wow, that sounds really good, but how much do I really need that? Like, you know, if I ever need a coffee or if I ever need a drink, I'll go to Starbucks, and then I might see that there, and then I might get it, but I might not necessarily need coffee one day, but I might see that, and if I lived in a place where I could get Starbucks, I might go there and end up buying more than I need to.
Fast food advertisements are a great example of a time of food advertising, because obviously we all need food, so it's an essential service. But these fast food ads are just blaring in our faces all the time, telling us that, oh, there's this new McChicken nugget burger that you can get, or now it's only 99p for the chicken mayo nugget burger, whatever, these strange things that we don't actually need. Or in the UK, we've seen a lot of, in the past few years, a lot of new fast food chains being imported from the US, so now we've got like Five Guys and Wendy's and Popeyes have all moved in. Whereas previously we only had Burger King and McDonald's and KFC. Those have sort of been there for years and years and years, but now we're getting a lot of new entrants that are coming to the market, and I think they're being very successful with it. But it's just, whenever you walk through the center of town and you see all these places, they're just, the front is just blaring with advertisements. Because I mean, I cycle past the Wendy's every day, and they're just constantly running this video that's trying to grab your attention about how, look at this bacon and ice cream and all this amazing stuff that we've got. And
it was just a quick question for you. I mean, what do you think about the health implications of a lot of these advertisements, a lot of these fast food and restaurant chain advertisements that we get? I mean, there's a lot of health implications, and then there's also a lot of environmental implications that arise from the agriculture sector, and especially with regards to fast food. I mean, what do you think about that, Oz? Just
it's so true, because I mean, most countries have banned cigarette ads, because what cigarette companies are doing are profiting off people's doing these things, doing smoking, which is incredibly bad for their health. But there's more and more evidence that fast food is also really, really bad for people's health, and it's causing obesity crisis and all this stuff. So in a way, allowing the advertising of fast food companies is allowing them to further profit off people's misery and unhealthiness, and promoting unhealthy trends, which is probably not a great thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, and then of course, if you look at like the agricultural sector, I mean, like we discussed this season one, we discussed this a lot. Because this is something that both Oscar and I are passionate about, is that, I mean, if you look at the unsustainability within the agricultural sector and the spectrum of emissions that arise from that, from unsustainable production of plants to unsustainable raising of meat and unethical raising of meat, I mean, like, there's a lot of problems that arise from this, and also a lot of these fast food restaurants, I mean, the way that they're sourcing, the way that they keep those prices so cheap for you is by abusing the animals that they use to make their product. So, I mean, the cattle that they buy are injected with antibiotics, and they're in like a 2 meter squared pen. And it's like, you know, like this is the type of environments that they're being forced to live in. And by purchasing that meat, the fast food chains are able to keep it cheap. But, I mean, there's a lot of problems, and we get soil erosion from that as well. I mean, aside from how unethical it is, we get massive amounts of and massive concentrations of cow manure that can end up leading to eutrophication, which is like the growth of these really bad algae in water systems as they sort of run off. And, I mean, we have all these problems that arise from the agricultural sector. So especially, I mean, advertisements from fast food and from chain restaurants that are really trying to catch your attention can be really, really bad, of course. I mean, that's just one example. Then you could look at the fashion industry. You could look at, there's so many examples of different ways that advertisements can negatively affect the environment. But, I mean, yeah.
And this thing with advertisements is that, like I was saying, when I cycle past the Wendy's, there's a massive screen at the front with this video that's just like constantly playing on loop. But all around the place, advertisements are capturing our attention and taking up our time. Like if YouTube's gotten particularly bad in the last few weeks, but now I want to watch like a 5 minute video or something, and I get 30 seconds of unskippable ads before then, like two 15 second unskippable ads. It's ridiculous. It's really quite ridiculous, because you know, YouTube's a monopoly. They can basically do whatever they want and people are going to have to stick with them. But it's actually wasting a lot of our time. You know, if you added up all those seconds that you spend watching ads together into like one lump, you'd spend like days and days and days of just watching advertisements. And do you really want to spend your time doing that? And really, like on the internet where most things you don't have to pay for, instead you're basically paying with your attention. And that's sort of the currency, whether that's a creator on YouTube who wants your attention so that then they make money from that by way of ads, or advertisers directly who are paying for your attention. Attention is almost become the digital currency.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason that if you want an advertisement to go up on YouTube, for example, or on a website, you know, web page, you get these little advertisements that pop up on the side margins. I mean, to get those advertisements there, you have to pay money. And the reason that you have to pay money is because in getting that advertisement there, the company thinks that they can make enough profit to compensate for the amount of money that they've paid for the advertisement. So they pay for that advertisement to go up, and then maybe 5,000 people see it, maybe 125 buy it or whatever, and then they end up making so much profit that it ends up working to their advantage. But I mean, that's the thing, is all these advertisements that go up, they're just trying to catch you. And they might not all do that, but a lot of them will. And oftentimes it's not really things that we need.
Oh, 100%. It's this idea of an artificial want. That the thing is, like, even for sensible people such as you and me, and I'm sure all of our listeners, advertisers use psychological tricks to force their messages into our brains. And there's a bunch of ways they do this, but you can just basically look at yourself with a very critical eye, and you can see the effect that advertisers may be having. And so that there's a bunch of things. There's this idea of, like, any publicity is good publicity. So increasingly, advertisers will just do increasingly crazy things in order to get people's attention and get noticed. So maybe one example is like Dbrand, who just do really ridiculous sort of stunts when they sponsor tech creators by having wacky skins, or, you know, they made that whole kerfuffle about, you know, the PS5 dark plates, and they got sued by Sony, but that was just all a publicity stunt. And so there are lots of different ways that companies go around doing these sorts of things. But at the end of the day, if they're a profit-making company, they're probably hiring like marketing people to psychologically trick you, to manipulate you into thinking that you want these products that you don't necessarily need. Another fun example is Marmite. So in Britain, there's a massive cultural divide of you either love Marmite or you hate Marmite. There's like no in between. But funnily enough, this idea of you love or hate Marmite was invented by a marketing agency for Marmite, because Marmite were like struggling with their sales. I mean, it's a kind of a goopy, it's a goopy spread made out of the leftovers from brewing beer. It's not exactly that attractive. So they invented this whole idea of there being this massive cultural split about you love it or you hate it. And that was what they reinforced with their publicity. And that's what made Marmite actually so popular and such a well-recognized brand.
And then, I mean, I think, Oscar, you brought up a really good point a minute ago, which is that some of these advertisements that you're being exposed to, you might not necessarily recognize them as advertisements. I mean, they might not be direct advertisements that, you know, you see pop up on your YouTube. They're everywhere. They're in your news. They're in, in so many things that we consume. There's these little advertisements and little things that companies, it's very smart how they drop these little, like, it's like fish hooks to like just catch people. And I mean, that's what they do, is a lot of these, you know, you might not necessarily realize that you're being exposed to, but they're still creating this artificial want. And another thing that you know, a lot of these companies do in order to make profit is that they create these seasonal trends, which is something we've talked about in the fashion episode that we did a couple weeks ago. And so they create these seasonal trends. So in winter, you know, it's like whatever, this new down feather coat, whatever. And then in spring, they have like the newest florals and your new short shorts. And like, and the thing is, then they create this, like, if you're not staying up with the trends, then it looks like you don't have money. And then there's this whole stigma, social stigma that we've created, that these companies have sort of created and manipulated to their advantage, that mean that if you don't stay up to date with current trends, whether that's phones, I mean, phones are a huge thing, right? I have an iPhone a slightly older model, and already people are like, are you ever going to replace that? And it's like, well, it's fully functional. Like, do I need to? And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you're not staying up to date, it's people sort of look at you in a different way. And so there's this need for you to stay up to date with the seasonal trends. I mean, Apple, something we discussed and something Oscar mentioned a couple episodes ago is that, I mean, sometimes they'll release a new phone model and they won't even change the model. They'll add a new color. So maybe they'll put it in purple, and then all of a sudden they're creating a whole new market for that phone. And so then they're getting more money and more profit. And I mean, in a lot of cases, what ends up happening is that you have so much stuff, you've maybe bought a new phone and you don't need your old phone, that old phone just goes to waste. I mean, a lot of these rare earth metals that are in your phones that make them functional, I mean, they can't be recycled. And so you end up wasting a lot of these non-renewable resources that cost lots of money. And so, I mean, then you end up, it's just like waste and waste and waste. And that's this sort of problem that comes with advertisement.
Quick correction. Rare earth metals aren't actually super rare, but e-waste is still a massive problem.
Yeah. And then this sort of leads on to greenwashing, which is the idea that they tell you that, like, I mean, companies like Apple will do all this stuff that's bad for the environment, all this planned obsolescence, which we've talked about to no end. But planned obsolescence is essentially where companies deliberately make their products fail prematurely so that you'll buy the new ones. So yeah, then Apple will have all this planned obsolescence, and they'll do these sneaky things to make you buy their products. And then you go on their website and they have this massive page telling you about how sustainable they are. It's greenwashing. Greenwashing is essentially, I think everyone probably does know what greenwashing is, but greenwashing is essentially where companies pretend to be more sustainable than they are. And they use a lot of advertising, a lot of marketing speak to say that they have these sort of goals, or to make sort of slightly misleading goals, like saying carbon neutral by 2050. But you know, they haven't actually done anything towards that end. They're just going to leave that for people later to do. Banks are notorious for this.
You even see that on like Amazon Prime. I mean, it's greenwashing is this idea that it's this concept that these companies use, that, you know, if you see that they're trying to, you know, achieve sustainability or whatever, then you go, oh my gosh, like they're pretty sustainable. So like, I don't have to feel bad about buying this product because, you know, they're doing good stuff for the environment. But, you know, really it's sort of this farce that they've created, and then you end up buying products when you might not necessarily need them, which is, you know, where this sort of problem, you know, it's another one of these tricky mechanisms that they use to catch you, right?
Yeah, I mean, going back slightly to the sort of psychological tricks that they use, there's sort of this idea of any publicity is good publicity, just brands trying to get their name out there. There's like nudge theory as well. Trying to actually remember what exactly that is, but it's like just small little things that make, it sort of goes in hand in hand with subliminal messaging. It's like, rather than just outright stating, oh, go do this, go do this, go do this, it just is just like having their name around. It's like Coca-Cola will just put their name absolutely everywhere, even if it's not saying buy Coca-Cola or Coca-Cola is better or anything like this. It's just that the fact that their name is so prominent, it just sort of burns it into your brain to the point where it's like, oh, you go into Sainsbury's or, you know, Chipiku or wherever you get your food, or looking for a soft drink, and you're just like, oh, Coca-Cola, that's just the one I'll get. You haven't even like considered Pepsi, just because their brand is as well known, even though at Sainsbury's Pepsi is 20p cheaper.
I mean, the thing with Coke is that everyone knows what Coke is, so all they have to do is put their name on different pages and on different products and sponsor different events. You know, it's something that I thought was quite atrocious is that Coca-Cola is actually sponsored COP27, which just, I think, just finished. But I mean, they're a hugely unsustainable company. You know, with the glass bottles that you can sometimes get, like in Malawi, it's not that bad because they can recycle them. But in a lot of cases, I mean, glass production is not hugely sustainable, and a lot of those glass bottles end up going to waste. And now they're producing all these little plastic bottles that are so much cheaper, that so no one wants to buy glass bottles anymore, and then you end up like wasting a lot of money on like 500 little plastic bottles of Coke. And it's just like, I mean, they're quite an unsustainable company, whether or not it appears that way. And the fact that they've sponsored COP27, I thought was quite shocking, actually.
I mean, it's better than like Shell or BP sponsoring COP27 at least, but it's just another example of Coca-Cola just trying to get their brand name everywhere. And what are we doing here? We're just giving them even more publicity. Like, this is ridiculous.
Because now at the end of this episode, you might find yourself craving an ice cold Coca-Cola, and then you'll go buy one. And that's the thing. It's like, it's creating this artificial want or this...
If you do go to the shop to buy an ice cold cola, why don't you buy an aluminium can of Pepsi Max instead?
Even the cans are hard to find now, because now that these... I mean, over the last year, these plastic bottles, they're like 10 centimeters tall and have all these weird bends in them, and they're totally, especially in Malawi, non-recyclable. And of course, we've already said plastics are finitely recyclable, so at some point they're just waste. And they come in these like 20 packs or 30 packs, and you go to the store and you buy it, and it's like, I mean, you think about how much plastic goes into that. I mean, it would even be better to get like 4 big bottles than to get those 30 small bottles, and they've just marketed it so that the small bottles are better and they're cheaper, so that people want that and then they buy that, and it's just completely unsustainable.
Cans are still fairly popular here, but the thing is that the cans are 330 mils and the bottles are 500 mils. Like, why can't they just make a 500 mil can? You know, but I mean, the bottles are sort of better in a way that, you know, well, they have advantages and disadvantages. But bottles, you can like put the cap back on, so you can sort of like drink it over a long period of time. But anyway. Yeah, that's basically it, is that this just brand recognition, just getting your name out there on anything, just builds a positive association with your brand. This is also why brands like sponsor events and sponsor videos, is that you have like a positive memory of the World Cup, and then in all the videos of the World Cup you watch, it's got like Coca-Cola along the background and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so shall we just change tack slightly? And this is not a very environmental point. It's not really an environmental point, but something I sort of wanted to mention is that because like nobody is willing to pay for the websites that they use on the internet, advertisers have essentially become the de facto moderators of the internet. So if you think about what sort of things are allowed on different platforms, whether that be Twitter or YouTube especially, like Facebook or anything like that, companies' moderation policies are dictated by by advertisers. So what YouTube says is okay on the platform is essentially down to what advertisers say is acceptable, because advertisers don't want to have like a negative association with their brand if their brand is next to an undesirable video. So since YouTube, almost all of YouTube's revenue comes from advertisers, whatever they can put on their platform is entirely dictated by what advertisers are willing to have their brand associated with, because if they don't want their brand to be next to porn or something like that. And so that's why it's banned on YouTube for those reasons. And it's the same with lots of other companies that rely on advertising have had to bend to advertisers' wills, essentially. And that's not necessarily a good thing if everything that we do is just controlled by advertisers, compared to being controlled by the people who actually use those websites. And it's the same with companies like Visa, or specifically Visa and MasterCard, basically, are the moderators of the entire internet as well, because they process all the transactions. It's like they have a duopoly over that. So that's essentially why so many things are very difficult to find on the internet. It's because Visa and MasterCard aren't willing to make transactions based around those things. And so they're the ones that make the rules, and they can arbitrarily cut anyone off at any time. And it's their will. It's not a government that's really enforcing that. So moving on, yeah, we've talked about greenwashing. We talked about things like Apple's sustainability page, which I've sent you a picture on WhatsApp of. It's a picture of all their products showing how sustainable they are. And it's like, oh, your product also cares for the environment. Lots of green. Banks are really bad at this. They make all these targets. And
34% reduction in carbon footprint. Yeah,
exactly. It's all these sorts of things.
No outer plastic wrap.
If you also think about like planes, there's a lot of... Or airlines tend to have a massive amount of advertising about their carbon footprint or how they're going to be carbon neutral in the future. And in fact, a lot of these advertisements that you see are just lying to you. But the thing is, organizations like in the UK, we have the Advertising Standards Authority, just don't do enough to counteract it. Like, there are lots of examples of where activist groups have written to the ASA to say, like, say this EasyJet advertisement is misleading. It is misleading, and it's not portraying a true fact. And the Advertising Standards Authority almost always ignores these claims. There's also a lot of stuff to do with the meat industry about humane washing is sort of the term for it, which is going off the back of greenwashing, which is where they run advertisements or publicity campaigns about look how humanely our meat is sourced, look how happy these animals are. When if you have an actual investigation, it always uncovers bad things. And if you think about, yes, there's organizations like Red Tractor in the UK, which supposedly assure farming standards, but like 0.01% of their visits to farms, like their inspections to check that farms are complying, 0.1% of them are unannounced. So almost always they'll tell the farmer beforehand that they're going to come along, which gives them time to prepare, which like undermines the whole point of having this inspection program. And so there's this massive element of how corporate interests are controlling advertising, and these agencies like the ASA that we have that are supposed to protect us aren't really doing that. So you do have to be very skeptical about any advertisement, especially one that's trying to make you feel good about the product or about the ethical implications of that product. Following on nicely from greenwashing is like fossil fuel advertising with the news media. So using almost the exact same tricks as the cigarette industry used to use before cigarette advertising was banned. Fossil fuel companies are doing this exact same thing to promote their message and to greenwash themselves, to massively greenwash themselves. Because obviously many people nowadays are very rightly skeptical about fossil fuel companies, about fossil fuels, about the future of fossil fuels. But these oil companies are just doing so much to try and spread a positive message about themselves. One trick that they use, which is, I think, invented by the cigarette industry, is basically they buy like a full page advertisement in a newspaper, which is fine. Like we see those all the time. They're quite obviously advertised, but they've got lots of bold colors, whatever. But what they've figured out that they can do is they can buy a full page advertisement and then make it look like an article in the newspaper, like with a headline, and maybe it's got their brand logo and maybe it's in a different font, but it looks much more like an article. And this has been brought even further by companies like the New York Post, who have this thing called like a brand studio, which is where essentially fossil fuel companies or any company for that matter can pay the New York Times to have not their journalists, but a department of the New York Times will produce advertising for them and put it on the New York Times. So you can actually find like these, it'll have like a small thing saying sponsored or whatever, but you'll have this article on the New York Times that's in the newspaper or that's on the website that is actually just a complete cover-up paid for by Shell with their interests at heart and no editorial oversight. But the thing is that's really grating is that this is having a massive positive impact on the fossil fuel industry in that it's helping them, it's helping their corporate interests. And it's being fueled by the fact that companies like the New York Times and the Washington Post allow fossil fuel companies to advertise. See, before cigarette advertising was banned like nationwide in the US and in the UK, companies like the New York Times had already banned cigarette advertising because they were like, oh, this is unhealthy. So we're just going to say no thanks. We won't have this. We won't take your money. But they haven't done the same thing with fossil fuels, despite the fact that fossil fuel advertising doesn't make up a massive portion of the revenue that they receive. It makes up a small portion. So it's really quite unethical of companies, of newspapers like the New York Times, to accept money from these companies that are destroying the environment for their advertising and making false news for them that looks like news but isn't on their website when they're a trusted company. And the thing is that this fake advertising really works. Like psychologically, it gets into people's heads. It makes them second guess these sorts of things. You know, like, oil companies are some of the first to realize that climate change is real, but they're going to be the last to really accept it. And they'll always do whatever makes them most popular. So maybe now all the oil companies have a statement on the website saying that they want to be net neutral by 2050, whatever. But it's absolutely like, it's crazy. It's made up. It's not realistic. And they just want to keep making money. They want to keep their investors happy, whatever.
If you think about as well, like something that we've talked about in previous episodes, how they, you know, we talked about like greenwashing, and greenwashing is huge, huge with the fossil fuel industry. In a little bit more of like an indirect way. I mean, of course you have like biofuels, which make people feel like, well, it has bio in the name. There's some agricultural product in there. So like it's not 100% oil, so it's not as bad. But it really is. And I mean, a lot of those, I mean, they're using like whatever, corn to produce those biofuels, which means that they're wasting agricultural land and wasting a food, like a very important food source on the production of a fuel. And also they're probably using very unsustainable practices to source that corn. So probably using tillage, pesticides, synthetic fertilizers. I mean, all these unsustainable practices to grow and to harvest that corn to produce those biofuels. And so, I mean, by putting bio in the name and then putting it everywhere as like the green alternative to straight fuel, and by raising the prices of like regular fuel, they make it seem like biofuel is the most environmentally sustainable option, but it's really not. And I think a lot of people also don't understand what biofuel really means. And so then that makes it even worse. And then also, I mean, you have like the fossil fuel industry. This is something I think Oscar might like to talk about, but I mean, they were the ones who started this whole idea of like bike to work.
Yes. Yes. We talked about this so much in our carbon footprint episode. It was, I think, BP invented the carbon footprint. That was invented by BP's marketing department, right? How crazy is that? Because they wanted to shift their responsibility for the climate crisis from them, where it was previously, onto you.
So, I mean, and that's crazy. So, I mean, if you think about how manipulative that is, I mean, by creating these advertisements for you should bike to work and you should not leave your lights on and you should not, you know, take long showers or whatever, like these tiny little things that have very minuscule effects on that, you know, actual climate crisis. Now it seems like it's a you problem and something that you have to directly deal with rather than something that they have, rather than it being a problem that they've created. So now it's no longer their problem to deal with and it's yours. And I mean, it's this, it's crazy. I mean, how manipulative that is. That's greenwashing, and it, you know, that's one of the best examples of greenwashing. And one of the most classic examples is that they, I don't know. I mean, what? Oh, it's incredible and it's horrible. What do you think?
It's bad because it gives people a false sense of security about the environment. It makes people feel confident that they're making ethical and environmental choices when they're really not. And it's really hard to look past greenwashing because it is everywhere and everyone does it. Whether that be a company like Google saying that they're carbon neutral, when yeah, perhaps they are, but it's not because all their servers run on renewable energy, but they pay for renewable energy products somewhere else to get credits so that they can say they use renewable energy and not the data centers or something like that. Or use of different misleading terms like carbon free versus carbon neutral versus zero carbon. Like there's all these different terms and they all have slightly different meanings. And for just an average person who's just like trying to make more environmental choices, this sort of marketing speak can be really difficult to overcome. Yeah, I think we've sort of already covered this, but like adverts, like they clutter cities and they make places less enjoyable places to be, whether that's online places like where you're seeing advertisements everywhere or when you're walking through the city and there's an advert on the bus stop or on the building, or even if it's not an advert that's like being paid for necessarily, like a billboard. There's even just stuff like, you know, when you walk past a fast food restaurant, they've got these massive posters outside advertising their wares, or a supermarket you walk past and it's got the deals out the front. All these are examples of advertisements that clutter cities rather than cities being places for like social enjoyment or walking around or really enjoying. They do get quite cluttered with advertisement. And the other thing that I think you did sort of already touch on at the beginning, which is that because advertising creates an artificial run rather than you just purchasing services that you require, it does promote consumerism. It absolutely promotes consumerism. It is the foundation of consumerism, really, is advertisement. Because without advertisements, there wouldn't really be consumerism because people wouldn't really know what things exist beyond the things that they have searched out because they're services that require, really. And so in that respect, I don't think advertising really makes society that much better. It just makes it much worse for the environment. And advertisement in the same way sort of promotes a growth-based economy because you just want more and more and more rather than just how much do you need to have a happy life. That's as much as we'll have. So, okay, that's the end of the problems. Music time.
You're listening to Fighting Failure. This is episode 39, all about advertising and its negative environmental implications. If you found this insightful, please consider sharing it with someone who would appreciate it too. Now, on to the solutions.
That was all right.
Yeah. The first way to sort of protect yourself from advertising. So we'll talk about sort of two different elements, which is how do you protect yourself from advertising and how can we sort of have a more societal change. But the first one is install like an ad blocker. It's really simple. So if you're on Chrome or Firefox or, you know, Edge or... go install like uBlock Origin is the one that I use, but there are tons. And if you're a desktop, it's like always going to be free. You install an ad blocker to block ads on YouTube and on all websites, and it can do a ton of stuff and like easy. And that will block all your ads. And if you're on a desktop, like then you should really never see ads on your computer because most websites like YouTube, you're accessing through a web browser. If you're on an iPad or an iPhone, obviously it's a lot more difficult to block ads on apps like YouTube or if you know, say you're like on a Reddit app or the Twitter app, it's because it's not running through a browser. It's a lot harder to block ads on that. But when you're using Safari, you can download from the App Store a content blocker for Safari that will block ads. It's more difficult to find ones for the free. They'll usually try to upsell you at a premium plan. Sorry, I got a bit of a lock nose. However, I haven't tried it myself, but I think you can find paid ad blockers on the App Store that have some way to block ads in other apps, but I can't vouch for their efficacy.
Yeah, what I think though is, I mean, of course, you know, ad blockers can definitely save time and get those, you know, annoying ads out of your face. But I think what's even more important than blocking out these ads is just understanding them. I think understanding and knowing that a lot of these companies are just trying to hook you understanding and thinking about whether or not you need a product before you think of purchasing it, whether you're purchasing it because you saw it in an advertisement or because you really need it. Think about how much do I need that? What impact is it going to have on my life? And is it a good investment? And then just being conscious. I mean, when you buy it, how sustainable is it? If it's a food product, is it non-GMO? Is it organic? If it's a clothing product, is it using synthetic fibers? Is it using, you know, sustainable trade cotton? Is it using, you know, mass production? Like, I mean, there's all these things that you can look for. Often it's on the packaging. Often it's necessary for those things to be on the website, or you can just look it up. But I mean, just think about, you know, what impact you're having when you're buying different products and or thinking of purchasing a product. Because I think just being a conscious consumer is really the most important thing. Yeah, but definitely, I mean, of course, ad blockers help if you're just sick of seeing them and having them in your face. And also ad blockers are a good way to protect your kids. If you're a parent listening to this, ad blockers are a good way to protect your kids from these sort of like consumeristic mindset that's sort of forced onto viewers of advertisements and unknowing viewers of advertisements. So any advertisements that might target kids, it's a very good way to protect your kids and create this like shift in mindset. Yeah.
It's a very malleable brain, so it's very dangerous for them to see ads because they can be much more imprinted on us than our sensible people who can sort of look at them with a critical eye. But yeah, some people might be thinking like, okay, so it's all well and good to block advertisements, but like, you know, at some point, those companies do need to make money. So if there are services that you do actually value and you think you get plenty of value from them and you want to use them, and then things like, you know, YouTube or Spotify or Netflix, then do pay for them, because if we're thinking about the sort of future we want to see without advertising, then that's going to be where we're going to be paying for things that provide us with value, and compensating the creators of that value. For example, YouTube spends billions and billions of dollars on data centers to hold all their videos and developers to make the applications, and that's not free for them. So they have to be compensated, and of course they're making massive profit, but we do need to pay for what we're getting out of the service at some point. So if there are services like YouTube or Spotify or Netflix, or maybe, you know, like a newspaper like The Economist, then anything like that, then just pay for a subscription to that if it's something that you get value out of, and then enjoy having those, that sort of premium ad-free experience on all devices or whatever like that, as well as the feeling that you're actually supporting like what you're using and allowing its creation to continue.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with these services, of course, is that, I mean, the free versions, all these services, right, they're all created out of a want for profit, or the majority of them were. And so, or at least at some point, they might have become that way. So, I mean, a lot of these are, these companies are looking to make profit. So the way that they make profit is by inserting advertisements on their web pages or inserting advertisements on their services, because those people pay to have those advertisements there. So they're making profit like that. But I mean, like Oscar said, you're sort of compensating them for the, to get those advertisements out of your face, because then they're putting up less advertisements. So then you're paying them to take them down for you. So it's sort of, I mean, it's sort of fair in a way. I mean, of course, the way that, you know, advertisements are created is sort of unhealthy. So obviously, you know, these products being more conscious of the effect of, I mean, some of them are pretty conscious of the effects of the advertisements that they put out, but they still do it. But I mean, it would take more of a shift in these companies to create a bigger change. But of course, I mean, it's a pretty fair deal to pay $20 a month for a product that you use a lot, or maybe $5 a month for a product that you use a lot to get those added benefits. I mean, that would be like $60 a year. If it was $5 a month, and a lot of those products are something like that, $5 a month. So, I mean, it's really not that bad if you think about it in the long term for a lot of our listeners. Of course, not everyone can afford this, but for a lot of our listeners, that would be something that's feasible.
And going further than just supporting massive profiteering enterprises is if there are specific creators or people that you support their mission, or even just enjoy the content they create, then directly supporting them on a platform like Patreon can be really beneficial. So there, for example, maybe there are climate activists who their job is activism, and they're able to support that because of crowdsourcing funding from Patreon, or YouTube creators who are able to have a much more stable income than from AdSense by having people on Patreon. If there's people that, like specific people that you get, that you think provide a lot of value to you, that's entertainment value, or you support them and the mission and whatever that they're doing, then a lot of them will have Patreon or always support. Or there's a service called Nebula that I subscribe to, which has a lot of like the best like sort of YouTube creators, not like all the gaming ones or anything like that, but usually educational sort of people that put a lot of effort into their work. And then you subscribe to Nebula, it's like really cheap. It's like $15 a year. That gives you like access to all their videos, often early. There's often exclusive videos and they remove those like sponsorship spots. So, you know, like they put sponsorships inside the video as well as YouTube ads, and those are removed as well. And there's obviously no ads on the platform. And that's a great example. That company is entirely owned by the creators whose videos are on it. So, or at least they have a majority stake in it. So that's a really good example of something like that, sort of going beyond advertising. Can I just like quickly rant about podcasts? So like historically, the way podcasts, which is like a really old form of media on the internet, because it's run on RSS, it's not centralized on like YouTube. There's no one company that could like run ads on podcasts, or one company that makes money from the distribution of podcasts, or one company that control which podcasts it can exist and which can't. Like anyone can make a podcast and host it, and it can be accessed by other people. But then how it works is how it used to work basically was that individual podcasters or podcast networks who had like their shows that had thousands and thousands of listeners would liaise directly with advertisers and have sponsor spots. But almost always these would be read by the host. So the person that you're listening to, a person that you trust, would then pick and choose companies that they trust as well, and then read out an advertisement. So while it is a sponsored message, and it is something that's come from an advertiser, and the advertiser said what they want the person to say, that person that you trust is also not going to lie to you. And it means that since it's a person that you like, or you have this parasocial connection with, then you're more likely to sort of at least not hate listening to an advertisement. And it works well for the brand as well, because they're getting this really positive association from this positive person reading it out. But nowadays, it's turning much more into something like YouTube, where big companies are buying out lots of smaller podcasters and podcast networks and putting massive amounts of money into their production. And something that's come along with that just drives me mental, it just makes me really sad, is something called dynamic ad insertion. So it's basically like a workaround for the way that podcasts work, because usually how podcasts work is that you just download the MP3 file of the podcast from the server, and then you have that, and then you can play it, and like no one can control what you can do with it because you've got the raw MP3. But how dynamic ad insertion works is that when you ask the server for the file, it will like choose based on like maybe certain data that it can get about you or what advertisers want at that particular time. Say you're like downloading it 10 years later, then you'll get a different ad to someone who downloaded it on the day it was released. They'll choose an ad, and then they'll re-encode the podcast with that ad baked in at the start or at certain points during the ad, and then they'll send that to you to download. So while you can like skip past the ads and stuff, because it is just an MP3 that you have access to, they're turning it into much more like YouTube advertising. It's not the sponsor that's reading the ad. It's just this random ad that's being produced by an advertising company. And it really annoys me, because I listen to quite a sort of old style podcast like Hello Internet and Cortex that have those sort of sponsor reads by the host, and I don't mind those. And then Tom Scott's made a new like game show sort of podcast, and it's got these dynamically inserted ads, and it's just like, oh, it's such a draw. It is like a draw. It's like a, oh. That's the rant.
Anyway, I think one of the biggest points here is that ultimately the goal is to just remove advertisement, at least certain types of advertisement. And of course, this is something that can't really be done. Otherwise, there would be no profit in any industry. But to some degree, I mean, there's certain advertisements and certain types of advertisements that definitely, either by government or by these companies, could be cut down on and limited. I mean, there's a lot of ways to cut down on advertisements, of course, and just limit people's exposure to a lot of these negative advertisements.
Yeah, I mean, I think like it's how much of advertising we're willing to remove depends on how idealistic we're willing to be. And given how strong corporate interests are, I don't think that anything we're about to say is at all likely to happen. So we may as well be as idealistic as possible and say, like, the goal is to remove advertising entirely, because it is what drives consumers, and consuming is bad. And this is obviously going to require, like, changes to the economic system. Like, you probably wouldn't be able to have an economy that is driven based on profit in a world without advertising, because advertising is so crucial to profits. So let's just take a few minutes to, like, discuss how we would replace advertising in a world like that, because services still need to be paid for, essentially. So if you think about like billboard advertising, whether that's on bus stops or cities or on highways and freeways and whatever like that, this doesn't generally bring in that much revenue for probably like the cities or councils that are hosting these advertisements. And I think most citizens would probably be happy to compensate for that with ever so slightly higher taxation. I was talking before, like advertisements outside restaurants or signs like that, I don't think those are so crucial to remove, because they're sort of relevant to where you are. So you only like see the sign for a restaurant when you're near that restaurant. And it wouldn't really make much sense just to have like, you know, I don't know, like a black front to every shop in the street, because that would just be boring. But stuff like advertising that's sort of removed from the service can be eliminated.
Yeah. I mean, there's just certain types of advertisements, right, that we could do without, and that some of these companies could probably do without. And then, of course, like, we want to address greenwashing. Like, I mean, there's so many examples of this, and I mean, it's unlikely that it'll ever happen. I mean, companies have, now that they've sort of found it out as, you know, a good method of hooking people by creating this interest because their products are sustainable, in quotes, not actually sustainable, is that you end up they'll never do it. I mean, you end up buying their products, and then they see that they're making product, they're making profit off greenwashing. And I mean, this it's not likely to ever stop. And if, there might be ways to minimize that, but it's just, I mean, like the most important thing, absolute most important thing that I'd like to get across is just be aware what you're consuming on the internet, in your everyday life, when you're on the car ride and you're looking at the billboard. I mean, like, just be aware of what these companies are feeding you, because oftentimes it might not necessarily be true, and they stretch these, you know, these sustainability claims. Like, I mean, a lot of companies in the meat industry will say that their products are ethical, and that they're that they give the cows enough space to live a happy life. But then, like, if you look at the amount of space for a cow to live a happy life in, like, government, like, governmentally, what they say is, like, an ethical amount of space for a cow to live in is something like 4 meters squared, which is not at all enough space for a cow. And so then it's like these companies are pushing, are really, like, pushing the, you know, they're just kind of touching the edge of sustainability and not really getting into it, because they can make themselves look good and increase profit without having to lose profits at being actually sustainable, you know? Because the world's so profit-driven.
Website advertising, probably the most interesting one to talk about how we might get rid of it. And so there's a few different things to talk about. First of all, there's this example of a different type of website advertising. It's still advertising, but that works in a different way. And this is like the Brave browser, which is like this private browser. It's based off Chromium, but it's got like anti-tracking features and ad blocker built in and whatever. And so the way that this works is that advertisements are displayed to you as notifications. So you'll get like a notification that'll say, Intel wants you to get the new i9-7-whatever-K processor. It's much better. And then if you click on that, then it'll take you to the website, and it'll kind of just click through, and they'll receive a small amount of money for that. And you get those advertisements in that form, which is far less intrusive and not dependent on the website, instead of seeing advertisements embedded on websites. And then in return for your attention on these advertisements, you receive these like BAT tokens, which is some dodgy crypto token, but that's what it is. And then participating websites, which have like signed up to this system, you can then like give them your BAT tokens, which can be exchanged for US dollars. And that way you're not paying real, you're not using real money, but the people who run the websites in the end of the day do receive real money when they exchange their BAT tokens. And I'm not saying that I approve of like dodgy crypto schemes, but I think this is sort of gives an example of where we might start by removing the advertisements, by removing the advertisements from the web pages and having some system for paying, but still having some system for paying the creators of said web pages. So a similar strategy that I envision that could be employed for web browsing, it would be difficult to implement, but I mean, this is all entirely idealistic, is that on top of the fee that you pay to access the internet through your internet service provider, you also pay a set fee, which is like globally standardized, to access the internet, which is, and so maybe it's like $10 a month or maybe $20 a month. I mean, like, you know, you access a lot of websites. And this fee is distributed between the websites that you visit, to pay for their services. And based on basically how much time you spend on the website. And this works in a similar way to something how like YouTube Premium works. So the way YouTube Premium works, you pay $10 a month or whatever. And then your money, or all the money from YouTube Premium subscribers, is split amongst the watch time, so of the YouTube Premium subscribers, which is why videos with longer videos on YouTube will have a higher revenue section from Premium, because it's just done based on watch time. That's the revenue split. And it works sort of in this way, which means that just based on whatever websites you visit, then that set fee is just split up based on those. So it'll be interesting to see how that fee is set, because you'll have to sort of, if you use the internet less, then each website will receive more money from each visit from you, because it's not like a pay-as-you-go. It is a sort of set thing that's split up. And so it's not perfect in that sense. But I think it would be ludicrously expensive if you tried to pay the sort of monthly subscription for every website that you visit. Like if you paid for, like, I don't think you can pay for Facebook, but if you paid for like YouTube and Twitter and you know, every new site that you visit all have like their subscription options and Spotify and all those, it would be ridiculously expensive. But like, is it really worth paying, you know, $10 a month if you read one article from the Times every year? No. So by instead having a certain amount of money that is split up between the websites that you access, then that news website will still get a tiny bit of money from you, just like they would have if you had accessed their website with ads. But you don't have to view the ads, but they still get compensated. So it's sort of done a bit more based on how much you use services relative to each other.
Yeah, I mean, just another thing that I just like quickly like to add there. I mean, you're saying it's like fees in a lot of these, you know, where you get like the premium service and it's free of advertisements. I mean, you pay something like $10 a month. For a lot of these, I mean, a lot of news sites, a lot of music, like Spotify, music distributors, I mean, and you pay however much money it is per month or per year or whatever. And I mean, people whinge about this, but I mean, if you think about like before we had access to the internet, people were paying $10 to $20 to $30 a month for library memberships, to go to the library to be able to access records and newspapers and books and things that barely scratch the surface of what's currently available on the internet.
Or if you think like how much songs cost before streaming.
Yeah, I mean for that's the whole music industry. I mean, I could rant about this as a aspiring musician. I could rant about this, but I mean the whole industry, right? The whole industry collapsed or became a lot more difficult, not promotion wise, not as in like difficult to get famous, but difficult to make money off, as we sort of shifted to the internet, because all these services, a lot of them are relatively free, and like musicians get a very low cut of profit off, you know, streams on Spotify and Apple Music and DistroKid and other free services. So what ends up I mean, you think about it, you used to pay what Oscar said, $10 for a CD, however much, $15 for a record. I mean, like you'd pay a lot for these services that now we take for granted and we see as these freely accessible services. But I mean, obviously, in the shift, right, these services can't have just gone from being paid to free. So obviously, there has to be some money coming from somewhere, and that's often where advertisements come in. Is there has to be some money coming from somewhere to compensate for that free service. I mean, so it's either that you're going to be getting advertisements or you're going to be paying to compensate for the fact that the service is now so readily available on the internet. I mean, like, that's sort of this thing is that we're taking all these services for granted. We're not really thinking about, you know, what we've come from and what's the effect of the way that we currently see and the way we currently you take the internet for granted, right?
And so going back to my idea of the, you know, you pay an extra fee to access the internet, which is distributed amongst the people who run the websites that you access, there definitely might be people who have concerns about this because, you know, the original principle of the internet is that it is free to access and that you can access websites without paying, because you that is, you know, the free and open internet is a founding tenet of how the internet works. But I mean, if you think about websites that are paywalled, like maybe you're able to access the landing page, but if you don't pay a subscription, you can't get in. So I don't think that the internet should be walled off for people who don't pay the subscription. I don't think the ISPs should just say, oh, you can't have access to the internet if you don't pay this extra fee, because there are definitely websites that people just run without ads as a passion project and they just pay like a tiny amount of money, or they just run it on their own server at home. And so if there are websites like that that don't have advertising built in, then they may very well just not sign up to this payment program and just have their website accessible on the open internet for free. So without the advertising, and you'd be able to access those sort of websites. But realistically, most big companies that, or most websites that you will access do rely on advertising, websites like Google. And so you'll need to have that fee to pay. And so a lot of people, and this would virtually eliminate sort of the scamminess of the internet, like most reasons that, or most of the reason why most websites are kind of rubbish is because they're just so full to the brim with ads and pop-up ads and stuff because they're trying to just squeeze a tiny bit out of money out of you because ads pay so poorly. And, you know, there's like, say I want to convert an image from a JPEG into a PNG. And so I like look up PNG to JPEG converter and like, oh, you've used up your 2 free conversions per month. But like nobody is going to pay a subscription to use an image converter online. Like you're just not going to because it's just not worth it. But if you had this system, then there's people who just run those servers that just do that quick conversion for you would just get enough money to compensate them for that. So I think having that centralized subscription would really help. And so, you know, I think a lot of people would be like, oh, but, you know, the internet is free now because I don't click on the ads or I don't pay for this sort of thing. But you've got to remember that the reason that companies keep buying advertisements and keep paying for them is because they are extremely profitable. It's extremely profitable to run advertisements. And then it's ROI, it's return on investment positive for advertising companies. So if you're like almost all people, there are very few people who aren't, almost all people are actually return on investment positive for advertisers in the whole. And maybe this means that you only buy like something from an advertisement once a year, but on average, it averages out so that in terms of extra money that you pay that you wouldn't have otherwise paid if you hadn't seen advertising, you are almost certainly actually paying for the services that you use in this way. Except you have a worse experience because there are advertisements everywhere. It's worse for the climate because you're buying things that you don't need. And so it's sort of a lose-lose in this situation. Whereas if you just paid for services that you value as a very fairly small amount, then you could get access to these services without having this mind pollution of advertising and also without having this artificial want and thus consumerism and hence the effects that are bad for the environment. I rest my case.
Even if we never get to this sort of like centralized subscription, I mean, even individual subscriptions, just to improve the quality of time that you spend on a lot of these sites, and reduce the number of advertisements that are in your face. I mean, A, they're worth it for you because they save your time, and time is something you can't get back. But also, B, I mean, these companies have to make profit somehow, right? So it's either you're going to be paying for their product or someone's going to pay to have their product advertised on their service so that they can make money. So, I mean, like, there has to be profit somewhere, and that's not going to change, right? So of course, I mean, these small fees that you can pay to get Spotify Premium, YouTube Premium, I mean, they might often be worth it if you're in constant consumption of their service, right? But I mean, in the end of the day, just be conscious of that, the effect of the advertisements that pop up on your browser, and be conscious of the effects of purchasing certain things that you might have seen advertised or advertised as sustainable. I mean, like we said, just be aware of the fact that there is greenwashing and that it's a very common thing, so that you're able to avoid it. I mean, just be conscious at the end of the day. And that's the most important thing that I think we want to communicate here.
With that, I think that's all that I've got in the show notes for this episode. But I think it's a fascinating topic. And
Huge, huge, huge thank you to Oz for writing these show notes because I've been so busy since I have malaria catching up on work. So he did me a huge favor and he wrote these show notes for this excellent show. So huge thank you to Oz for that.
I think it was fascinating to write them. It's a really interesting topic. It's actually quite nice to just get a lot off my chest in terms of something that's so prominent in today's society, much more than it used to be. And the detrimental impact that advertisements have everywhere. Like if you just look around and just think about it every day, how much greenwashing you see, how many things are influenced by advertising. It's pretty crazy. Whether that be even just things like positive brand associations, like you know, not buying the home brand thing from the shop, even though it's cheaper, or going with the Coke instead of the Pepsi, or you know, personally, I hate online shopping, and so I will happily pay like extra money just to buy something from a reputable brand, so I don't have to think about it or read too many reviews or anything like that. But I'm very aware that that's because that marketing team of that brand has been able to convince me that they are a reputable brand. But yeah, with that, I think, unless you have anything further to add.
No, I think that's it. So of course, thank you guys for listening and we'll see you next time.
Thank you and see you on the next show. Goodbye.
That was alright.